Welcome to Coach Aria's podcast, Coach to Lead.
Welcome, Alia. Today's session is not a traditional coaching session, not a traditional coaching subject session. And in any case, an advanced webinar, what we plan to do and what we have been doing is to go beyond the competencies and the framework. Those of you who really want to be more and more embedded in the competencies and the frameworks and the mentoring, you can always attend the Learner webinar, the Mastery Leadership webinar, Learner webinar with Cindy. This is supposed to be, or it is, about things which are beyond the regular curriculum. So the last couple of weeks, maybe the last couple of months, maybe 3 months, we've been having on neurosciences. Before that, we had on different subjects. In future, we might have on quantum science, all kinds of stuff, which we believe do relate to coaching in many ways. And it's for us to sort of show the dots and for you to connect them. In fact, in the next session, we are going to talk about the energy centers or chakras and how they are, can be related to coaching through emotions. In the same way, when I learned about Alia from Priya, with whom she's learning to the coaching training, she had presented a paper, she had made a presentation on Ayurveda and how it connects up with coaching. And not only was I intrigued, I was very impressed when I saw that, and we had a conversation. And she has developed today a presentation which is about the ancient science of healing in the Vedic system, the Ayurveda. Ayurveda actually means the knowledge of life. It's a literal meaning. And it's one of the very powerful traditional healing systems, medicinal systems that's known to mankind, along with the traditional Chinese medicine and several other ancient medicines of ancient cultures. And the important part of Ayurveda, as we will see today, is about the way that it looks us at the mind, not just the body. It looks at the totality of the mind-body wellness. And especially in today's circumstance, with the COVID all around and lots of other stuff that is happening as a result of the stresses created by the COVID, I think what we need, first of all, just as much as we need the physical protection and the safety, also the mental protection and safety. And so with that theme in mind, Alia will take you through. She will give you more of her own background as she goes along. She's a doctor in the Ayurvedic science. She qualified after several years, many years of practice, as you would need to do in any kind of a medical practice, as in the Western medical practice as well. And the discussion that I had with her was very erudite, very much based on science, very much based on the pure knowledge of that science. And I'll leave you to Alia today. You're in for an extremely informative and helpful session. Thank you. Thanks, Alia. All yours.
Thank you, Ram. This is a very generous and beautiful introduction. Yeah, I'm really flattered, actually, and very happy to be here. And I'm kind of new to speaking like this about Ayurveda, because my background actually was completely different until a few years ago. I am I'm not a medical doctor from the Western standpoint, but I have qualifications as an Ayurvedic practitioner and therapist after years of Ayurvedic schooling. So I would like to share with you something I prepared for you, and I will tell you a little bit about my story as I go along with the presentation, and I would like to make it also practical, theoretical, yes, but also practical in a way that you can take something out for you and use in your own life. Because in my case, after I've encountered Ayurveda, which was more than 8 years ago, my life has changed very drastically. And I'm sure I wouldn't be here now talking about it if I didn't see how big of an impact it had. And since we are in a coaching setting and I am learning coaching, I also tried with reflecting back on years of that I passed over the last 8 years, how coaching as well has been present in my life, because now I'm a student of coaching and I'm getting my credentials. But in the last 8 years, I have been on the other side. I have been a client for overall of almost 4 years. So on and off during this period of time. And again, I was reflecting on how it has changed me, my way of looking at life, and what was its impact. So I would like to share with you kind of a interweaved connection of these two, art of science. So today, what I will do is I will tell you a little bit about my personal background and who am I and how I got here. I will focus on the mind-body connection in everything that I will be showing you. You will see the healing approach of both coaching and Ayurveda and how it actually acting as a healer in my life and what it can do for others. I will tell you about my personal example, you know, of we're talking about emotions, as Ram mentioned, and how and what Ayurveda has to say about the manifestation of certain emotions. Like fear, anger, you know, avoidance, what it means in Ayurvedic terms and how it can be overcome. We'll talk about overall emotional imbalances in Ayurveda and how it addresses it. And then I tell you throughout of what attracts me to both of these disciplines. How do they supplement each other? How are they working in parallel? And to be honest to you, before, just a few months back, I wasn't sure actually that there is a parallel at all, or if they're addressing the same thing from different perspective, or they are completely two different disciplines. And going through this exercise right now and making kind of a real synthesis of what are they actually addressing and what is the most important thing in each of them, I was really amazed at what I saw, because I saw these two really working together beautifully. And I will show you later on what it means for me. And then, of course, I tell you what happened to me, actually, what once I went through both, through my own personal transformation, and how what was the end result? Or let's say my journey is not over, but until today's point, what it brought me to. So a little bit of my own personal story. You know, I was born and raised in Russia, in Moscow, at the time of the Cold War. So my upbringing was very, very different from what life in the Western world is. And I have to say that I had experienced many transformations in my life, and probably the first one was when I left Russia at the age of 20. At the time, I was pursuing a career, if you want to call it that way, of a professional tennis player. I was really, it was my life. I was breathing, living, eating, sleeping, tennis. And I was actually doing quite well. I was by the time I was living in Russia, I was number five in Russia in tennis in my age. So it was really my passion, my life, and everything I knew. But you know, I really, thanks to tennis, I started traveling the world when it was still behind the heavy curtain of Cold War, and I saw that what I was told in school and what the stories are about the West are not really what I saw with my eyes. And so I got really curious and I really wanted to go outside of Russia and experience it for myself. And with the opportunity that came, I got a scholarship in tennis, for my tennis, in United States. And at the age of 20, I basically pick up my tennis rackets, my bag. At the time, I didn't have much to take with me, really, and just left. And that was the big transformations, which now reflecting back, the process which I was going through was very similar to any transformation thereafter I did with life. You know, a lot of emotions come up when you leave, you know, a comfortable, safe place for unknown, maybe uncomfortable, new, maybe without having resources or support behind you or with you. There is certain emotions that get triggered. You know, there could be, along with curiosity and fun, okay, there could be also the negative side of maybe insecurities, fears, you know, will I make it? Will I be accepted? You know, a lot of that stuff comes along, which at that point I wasn't really recognizing. But now, retrospecting back, I see that any transformation that I subsequently went through was pretty much going through the same range of emotions. Today, so just to finish where I said, so I left Russia. I left my dream of becoming a professional tennis player kind of on the side. And I thought, now I want to experience the world. And I was studying in university. I was playing at the same time for American college. And I went into a safe, what I thought was safe route, because like I said, with being in a big change, I was looking for some safety. And so I went to the field of finance. I thought it was exciting. I thought it was very fashionable too at the time. And I thought it would be safe because it will make money. And so I would be happy. Fast forward 20 years, you know, I'm very quickly climbed the corporate career. I got my MBA. I was really going really well, doing really well. And I thought I was pretty happy. But the more I was going in that career growth in the finance, the more I was realizing that something is not right. And there's from the outside, everything was really looking wonderful. I have a great job, great pay, great lifestyle, relationship, anything you want. But deep inside, I was always feeling and more that something was missing. And I couldn't put my finger on it until I was kind of searching and asking these questions to myself and people I could trust. And at some point, I encountered Ayurveda. Because I looked for answers everywhere. I looked in yoga, I looked in phytotherapy, in Chinese medicine, you know. I knew the answer is somewhere else, not in my corporate world. So I tried everything, or a lot of things. And then I got to Ayurveda, and then I kind of, my eyes just opened. Because when I touched it, when I say touch, I just encountered a professor, and I had the chat, and I kind of learned what it is a little bit about and what is Vedas. And at that point, I really thought, oh my God, this is where I need to dig. And so first I became a patient, and I worked through with a doctor, Ayurvedic doctor, to what he saw. I didn't know anything then, and I didn't understand what he was doing, but I trusted, and so I started going through some treatments, through some herbal supplements, through some pieces of information he was giving me, to little by little kind of guiding me. Then I jumped into knowledge search, and I started reading all I could and listening to all I could about Ayurveda and what life purpose is all about, and who am I and why I'm here, and all these questions started pouring out of me. And that was going on for a while. And then I started to slowly see some things moving inside of me. But when I saw what was moving, I was getting even more uncomfortable. And so what I realized that as before, I was more or less unhappy, but I was kind of pushing it down and saying, okay, it's okay. I started seeing kind of the light was shining, what the reality of things is and where my life is. And when I was comparing these two, I was seeing the void. And that brought me to a big discomfort. And that was really a kind of a crisis point where I remember one day I was in tears, realizing that I'm climbing on the wrong wall. And if I don't change things now, I have basically a choice, or I continue with my life like it is, but I take responsibility for saying no to authenticity, to true full life, to expressing myself. But I will be, so to speak, safe, because that's what I know. Or I take a leap and I start going in a different direction, which I have no idea which direction. And that was a really, really difficult day. But what I did really the day that I have to make a change. There's no way I can go like this. And that's kind of, you know, this will happen 8 years ago. And so I made a declaration to myself at that point that I will change and I will start studying Ayurveda. I will not make any drastic move, but I will start studying. And the more I studied, so I became a student. And at the very same time, I was actually a coaching client. I took a coach to help me. And what I was doing is I was studying Ayurveda. I was realizing the life choices every day I'm making. And with the help of coaching, I was starting to see what is driving my choices. And am I really authentic to what I want to do or not? Or am I still holding on to the old ways of thinking, feeling, and choosing? And that also, you know, lasted for some time. It was at least a couple of years of that kind of back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, in which I have encountered all kinds of emotions, fear, anger, insecurity, you know, I don't want to deal with it, anything you name it. It was like a fight with myself. Then finally, you know, after these few years, I felt like I did a leap. You know, something clicked in me, and with a lot of fear behind, you know, a lot of anguish, I started making the right choices. And I feel like Ayurveda shown me the way, and coaching was critical in helping me see my own tendencies and gave me the courage to start making choices that mattered to me, the authentic me. And it was really incredible how the two worked with me. So having that said that, I've gone through the Ayurveda school and finished, it took me almost 6 years to go through that. It was a very extensive learning for me. And I felt like it was just the beginning, to be honest to you. The more I go into the science, the more it amazes me how complete it is. So I finished my coaching journey. I work with two different wonderful coaches, and I have started my coaching as a student because I realized the power of it. And I said, you know what, if this is what it's done to me, I would like, if anything else, to learn those tools to do it for myself. And then if I learn it, I can show it also to others. So this is kind of how my path has evolved. The change in my life seemed to be inevitable, but I think it's in everybody's life. If you start looking back at your life, you, I'm sure, will see how many critical things, critical situations you faced and choices you had to make, which evoked different kind of feelings in you and different kinds of new learning. So I think taking like I did now, just to reflect back on it, was really priceless to me. So now with this, I would like to a little bit tell you about Ayurveda. I'm not sure how many of you are really familiar with the science, but I will only briefly say that Ayurveda, as Ram said, it's the science of life. And if you want, I like saying it, as my one of my teachers likes to say, it's like a complete manual to life. When we're born in this body, nobody really tells us how to operate it, how to operate our mind correctly, how to make the right choices. What are the consequences of not operating it correctly? How our body works, how our whole system, our soma, works with the outside environment. How do we stay in balance? How do we bring ourselves to balance if we get out of it? All these things are critical. You know, it's the first thing you learn about a car when you buy a new car, how to operate it. So, and we never really take time to learn that information. We learn more how to operate in the, you know, the business world, how to learn mathematics and physics and all other things. So this is what Ayurveda is about. And it's a largely, I would say, preventive medicine, because what it's doing is it's helping you understand who you are, why you're here, what's your mission, or what's your purpose, how do you stay healthy to reach that purpose. And being healthy means physical health, mental health, spiritual health, overall health, okay? So it's looking at, let's say, the physiological composition of us, which from Ayurvedic standpoint is comprised of three doshas, which is nothing but manifestation of five primordial elements, which is, space, air, fire, water, and earth. And different combination of these elements manifest through our body in different ways. The premise here is according to Ayurveda, everything in our universe is made of these five primordial elements. It's just in different proportion. Let's say the river is made 100% from water element, while the stone is almost 100% of the earth element. Well, we are somewhere in between because we have water, our blood, our lymph, you know, saliva, everything liquid, but we also have our bones and muscles, which is more earth element. We also have ability to digest things, which is fire element, and so forth. We have a container, you know, that contains all our organs, which is space. And we move, and everything in our body moves. The nervous system is very dynamic system, that's air. So basically we have these three doshas, and each one of us has a predominance of a certain dosha, or one or two, or some of us are tridoshic, which is more rare, but it exists. I say all this is that when we are in a healthy state and all our dosha are functioning properly, and again, properly doesn't mean we're all equal. Each one of us is like a finger imprint, you know, imprint for all of us is unique. So our composition of vata, pitta, and kapha is unique for each one of us. And health for each one of us will mean balance of our own composition. So what these three energies, three compositions bring to us, in our nature, when we're healthy, and these three doshas are in healthy state for us, vata, you can think of, manifests itself as its predominance of air. So these people are flexible. They're very imaginative. They are, you know, really, really creative. They're moving, they're thinking, they're quick. They're quicker than anybody else to learn new things, but they're also quicker to forget them because air moves, you know? And in its optimal state, these people are creators. In fact, a lot of writers, a lot of composers, a lot of, artists, vata is a predominant dosha. However, if it goes out of balance and there's too much of the wind energy, that can create a feeling of fear and insecurity. And the predominant question that you may ask yourself if you have that disbalance is, what's wrong with me, right? You always start thinking something's wrong with me. And that creates, of course, insecurities, fears, low self-esteem, and so forth. And it can be corrected. Just to tell you, I always thought, well, this is me and this is how I am. And I realized, no, I can get that to reverse that. for the Pitta people, these people are natural born leaders. They're very, you know, strong-willed people, and they are very, very powerful and very charismatic. But when it gets out of control and it's too much fire in their composition, they can be angry and unacceptable, and they're blaming people. They're criticizing. They can get violent, aggressive. And the question they ask is, what's wrong with you? Okay. And Kapha generally is a nurturer. This is the people that have a lot of earth in their system, and they're really there to, they bring in peace and love and taking care. They're very motherly. But when it goes out of balance, they start being creating feelings like avoidance, attachment, possession, depression, you know, and finally they just say, I don't want to deal with it, and they withdraw. So once I started learning that this actually is not me necessarily, but this is the imbalance in my system of certain doshas, and this can be corrected with a proper treatment. So that, you know, became much more interesting to me, how I can go forward. So this is the physical, mostly physical three doshas that I just described. Now I would like to go into the three mental doshas. You know, in Ayurveda, of course, the premise I need to make that my body-mind connection is very strong. One does not exist without affecting the other. So when I talked about physical doshas, they of course will affect how you mentally feel. And now when we talk about mental doshas, they will affect how you feel mentally, but also how your physical body is responding. This is a very important distinction to have in mind, that there's no separation really. On the emotional level, there are three, they call them three gunas of mind, sattva, rajas, and tamas. And why I want to talk about this is because it's very much connected with our emotions. Sattva is, if you want to think of it, well, first of all, I want to say that we need all three, because just like three doshas, we need all three of them. We just need to make sure they are not going out of balance. With the mental guna, we need all three of them. But we do need to be careful that they don't go out of balance. Sattva is really the optimal, let's say, the illuminated mind, illuminated by spirit, because this is the clear vision. It's purity, it's light, it's unconditional love, it's optimism. It's really kind of when we get illuminated, I think that's what we all have, sattvic mind. And you can compare it to the lake where the water is crystal clear and it's not moving, and you can see stones and everything on the bottom. It's a perfect, you know, kind of picture. No obscurities, nothing prevents you. You see what you need to do, you know what you need to do, nothing is bothering you. This is kind of a mindset of sattvic mind. Rajas is a energy of movement. This is something that actually, it's an action, it creates an action. And it's great because movement is needed when you have a sattvic mind to make something happen. You have to have rajas energy. But if it goes out of control, it can cause you such states as having too much ambition, having greed, lust, focusing only on materialism. You have a desire to compete, control, dominate. It becomes, rajastic mindset is very competitive. And in fact, most of our world right now is living in the rajastic mindset. You know, we are running, we are working, we are having million things to take care about. And ultimately, we don't really have a clear vision why. Ultimately, why are we doing all this? So it becomes the ends and the means at the same time. And tamas, you know, if you see the beautiful lotus flower, sattva is the flower, you know, the beautiful white flower. Rajas is the movement of the energy, you know, the nutrition up to the flower. And tamas is really below the ground. Tamas is the energy of inertia. again, we need it because without that energy, we would not be able to rest, to sleep, to kind of let go, relax. But if that goes out of control, then we go into states of complete apathy, lethargy. We create bad habits. We have a depression, delusion. You know, ultimately, it leads to self-destruction because your mind is, as you see, it's under the ground. It's really obscured. You do not see anything. If you compare to the lake, again, you know, remember Sato was crystal clear, waters not moving. Rajas is that lake with a breeze, and so there are waves. You can see below, but sometimes you see clear, sometimes not. It depends on how much waves there are. And so it can be also illusionary, you know, because sometimes you see something, you think it's one thing, but it's not. And so you acted, you made the action, but it was a wrong action. So Rajas is, there's a danger of making a wrong action based on wrong information. And with Tamas, it's the lake where you see nothing. There is, you know, kind of a really dirty bottom of the lake and there's nothing to be seen. It's not clear. So there's no proper knowledge, no light. There's not even action of Rajas. It's just there. It's stagnating. So this is visually kind of, if you find yourself in these kind of situations where you cannot see clear with your mind, you can't concentrate, you're just depressed, you don't want to do anything, consider that maybe you have gone to the space of Tamas and all you need to do is get out of there. You know, you need first to go to the Rajastic state where you start. And Ayurveda explains very well the whole process of how you do it, so which kind of treatment protocol, which lifestyle, which eating habits, what do you need to do to get out of there? And ultimately from Rajas, you can go to Sattva. But you cannot go from Tamas straight to Sattva, actually, that's true too, because you need some movement, some energy first. And having said that all, so there's a lot of emotion that, as you can see, directed by the gunas of the mind. And the mind in Ayurveda is considered to be also a bridge to our soul. There's a manovaha srotas. It's channel, it's a kind of a, there are many channels in our body, but a specific one that is connected with the mind is called manovaha. And that's a channel, it's a subtle channel, of course, it's not a physical channel, but it is the channel in which emotions flow, in which authentic knowledge flows, in which our conscious is fluid. And that channel is very important that it's open, that it's not blocked. And your connection with your higher self, with your vision, with your intuition and everything, and with your soul remains open. But that channel is also very often blocked. And there are two main things that block it. One is emotions, when we are become slaves of our own emotions. And two, the increase of Rajas and Tamas. And in fact, Ayurveda says that all the suffering that we encounter, that we experience, comes from Rajas and Tamas. Sattva doesn't give any suffering. In fact, when people have strong Sattva, it's like mental Agni. They are able to digest whatever comes their way. They're able to digest the emotions, whether they're good emotions or bad emotions. They don't get stuck. They're processing it and letting go. These people, even if there are some, you know, physically they may be weak, but they can encounter mortal disease, they don't panic, they don't go into aggression and blaming self or the world. They stay, they don't ignore the seriousness of the disease they have, but they're so strong in the mind, they fight that without dispersing their energy on any kind of other emotion. So these people are really very clear in their head. And so how can we, you know, the Ayurveda recognizes there are six main, there are many levels and sub-levels of emotions we experience, of course, but they recognize that there are six main negative emotions. They're our enemies. They're lust, anger, greed, attachment, pride, and envy that we need to control. And I think, like I said, there are many sub-levels of this. Like anger is not just anger. It can be irritation. It can be mere unacceptance of a certain situation or a certain feeling or anything like this. So we need to be very careful, one, to recognize what we're feeling, even if it's very subtle. And we need to be able not to give it fuel. Because if we do give it fuel, we need to remember that what it's doing is it's starting to block our manavaha srotas, our connection with the soul, our connection with clarity. It's reducing our sattva, which is our vision, our ability to make the right choices, to see crystal clear what needs to be done, why it needs to be done, where we're going, why we're doing it. So that becomes blocked by our experience of these emotions. So those need to be very, very carefully, let's say, I don't want to say arrested, because we're not to block them. Blocking, of course, will create its own consequences, but we need to observe them. And what Ayurveda is advice in dealing with emotions, or rather sure that we control them, that they don't become too big and rule our lives, is practicing unattachment and cultivating sattva. And unattachment doesn't mean we don't care. Unattachment means we live our dharma, we live what is our purpose, and we don't get attached to the results. We perform the action. Like if I need to clean this window, I will do my best and I will clean it. If 2 minutes later somebody walks by and makes it dirty, it's okay. I am happy. I've done my job. What happened afterwards is not for me to get upset about or angry about or sad about. I move on with my duty has been done. So this kind of a mindset of doing without being attached is helping us to not become slave of our emotions. And cultivating sattva, which having high sattva, which will mean that we're having a control over our own mind. And having control over our own mind means having control over our well-being, because our mind controls our physical state and also our mental state. And if we are on top of this, we are the ones who decide how we feel. We are the ones who decide how our body, what state of health our body ultimately will have. So it's basically taking things in our own hands. And in Ayurveda.
Yeah, Alia, if you don't mind, there are a few questions, if you could answer them. One of them, they are very interesting questions. How would suppressed sattva show up?
You know, actually, there's three levels of sattva. There is strong sattva, there is medium sattva, and there is low sattva, what Ayurveda recognizes. Strong sattva, I think I explained this very crystal clear way of living. Lower, so medium sattva is when you experience high rajas. And this is a state where sometimes you're clear, sometimes you're not clear. You can fall into the trap of having half truth information, half clarity, but your rajas is so high that you will act anyway. And so you are creating actions that are based on not complete or maybe not true authentic information. And so you can create, of course, consequences in your life by creating action, having impact, but that's a wrong action and wrong impact. And I mean, I'm just going back to my own personal example, you know, my 20 years of corporate career, which I appreciate tremendously and it taught me a lot. But if I come to think about it, I was so driven by, I must, you know, have financial independence. I must achieve a status in society. I must do this, that I wasn't caring really. Do I really want this? Like, which part of me wants this? And is it the right thing for me to do? Those questions were not even answered. You know, I was just going and going and going until I hit the wall and I said, oh my God, is this really what I want? So to me, in my case, this was the fact, you know, my sattva was not very high, but rajas was very high. And also sometimes you see these people that get very motivated. They would listen to some lecture and they would say, wow, great lecture. I like Ayurveda. Let me go and do some new lifestyle changes. And they would go and do it. And my friend is doing it. And so they would do it for 3, 4, 5 weeks. And then they say, the motivation just goes down and kind of goes away because they don't have yet that crystal clear understanding why they're doing it. So at that point, motivation will not fade away. They're still, you know, a little bit yes, a little bit not, you know, maybe. So it's like this. And when sattva is really low, the third stage of sattva, this is when tamas becomes very high. And when tamas is high, you know, there's pretty much no light. You're under the ground. It can manifest as you are clueless what to do, or you are confused what to do. You're asking constantly your friends, your family members, your therapist. One friend tells you, go to this class. Oh, great, I go to yoga. Another friend says, no, you have to try phytotherapy. And you run there and you buy all kinds of phytotherapeutic remedies. You take it for 2 days and then it's sitting there on your bathroom cabinet. So you don't trust yourself, your intuition. You don't know what is good for you. You look for everybody else to tell you. You're exhausted. Then you say, forget everything. Nothing works. It's all useless. Life has no meaning. So it's that kind of stage. You're basically, you are not yet at the level of even moving. You're kind of there trying to figure out what to do. You're confused.
So,
or you're depressed.
Yeah, this the same way as you are now describing sattva in three levels. Would they be three levels to the tamas as well? That there is a higher level of tamas at which maybe you move out of the tamas into rajas or sattva.
You know, maybe it exists. I personally am not aware of these three distinctions. All I know is that to get from tamas, I would assume that lowest level is your, you know, in a very self-destructing behaviors and complete, you know, full depression state. Then low level, maybe you're just lazy and you're just not willing to do anything. So there could be a scale, you know, of this level. Mm-hmm. But to start getting to sattva, to, you know, where we're all striving to get, is we must pass through rajas. There needs to be energy flow. There needs to be desire to do things. There needs to be some kind of movement to get you out, you know, from the bottom, from under the earth.
Yeah. Now, the question, there's another question that has been asked, which then brings up this point for me. Are there any beneficial effects of the tamas? We'll come to that in a minute. And I'm sure in the part of your Ayurveda, you might have gone through the Bhagavad Gita, where at one point in the Gita, in the third chapter, where Krishna basically tells Arjuna, who asks him, which is a better state to be completely in sattva. The other way of defining sattva, rajas and tamas, very, very simply, is sattva is a state of being, rajas is a state of doing, and tamas is probably state of having, in a sense, and being satisfied with what you have, and you don't have any impulse to move forward. So the question of Krishna to Arjuna was, what is a better state to be in? From where you tell me that I should be a yogi, that I should be completely in sattva. or should I be, but I'm a man of action. So in fact, Krishna's answer to Arjuna is very clear. And that is where one of the most famous verses of Bhagavad Gita come up, Karmanya Vadikarastu, it starts. He says, every human being is designed for action. And the way to move out of the action is not to sit cross-legged, go into a forest. And I mean, the words he uses sometimes are not very pleasant, almost like fantasizing. But to do what you need to do, but like you said, without an attachment to the outcome. And that's the definition of the integration of the three qualities. So pretty much all of us are in a state of rajas, otherwise we wouldn't be living. The 100% state of sattva is impossible for an ordinary human being unless they are at a level where they are in a state of samadhi of one kind or another, where they do not have to really bother about what is happening in the outside world. So we are, as you said, if you were to define sattva in three stages, probably moving between these stages. And that is why Ayurveda recognizes these three gunas very, very clearly. And similarly, these are mind states, and they are linked in some way to the physical states of Vata, Pitta, and Kapha as well. Maybe there's an interconnection. Mm-hmm. So one is, I just would like to leave the thought, and maybe you can explain on that, is I think just to assume that the state of being or the state of sattva is the best state for us is, to my mind, is unwise. Because in that state, you really no longer are you any mode of action, and that mode of action is necessary for you to survive and live. So there has to be a certain amount of action. But at the same time, I'm also wondering, while yes, tamas means darkness, tamas probably refers to laziness and so on and so forth, but are there any beneficial effects of tamas as well? Is it in some way necessary for us as an integrated part of the gunas that is contributing to our wellness?
This is a great question. And the short answer is absolutely yes. It's not there to, like, a disease to get rid of. It is like three physical doshas, you know, Vata, Pitta, Kapha, all three are needed. It's just when they go out of balance, then it becomes problematic. Same thing with the mental gunas. All three are absolutely needed. Without tamas, we will have no rooting, no sense of being present in physical body here on earth. Our nervous system will never rest. We will never sleep. It's that grounding effect of stopping, slowing down, kind of bringing all the functions to rest, to slow motion. It's very beneficial. Like I said, without it, we will just fly and do without possibility to stop and reflect and, you know, kind of get ourselves grounded. As you said, we live in the physical world. We're not only living in our mind. We have physical bodies, and tamas is about the earth. It's about, you know, really the physical materialistic aspect of our existence. So it's critical to have it by if anyone is living on earth. It's just if it gets out of proportion and becomes the only or the majority of our mind is covered by tamas, then there's no space for movement. There's no space for clear thinking. It's all about just being here. In fact, you know, tamasic lifestyle is what Ayurveda describes is, you know, eating animals, drinking alcohol, watching TV hours per day. it's an existence, but you are living very, very lifestyle that is very materialistic, very kind of, if you want to say, heavy in a way. So if it's too much, it becomes too much. It becomes not productive for our self-realization. And the same with Rajas. Rajas is absolutely critical. All the things that are created on this earth are done from Rajas. You know, it's the creative energy. It's the our willpower. It's the ability for us to do, redo, invent, move, you know, generate. It's beautiful energy. Without it, just like you said in Sattva, that lake, that pond, that it's crystal clear, but there's nothing happening. So why are you coming here on earth? You might as well stay, you know, wherever the souls are. So Rajas is critical for functioning in this world.
Yeah, that's a beautiful point, Alia. In fact, the essence of the Upanishads and the essence of the Gita is that if you are in pure Sattva, which means it's a complete state of neutrality, that is called the state of samatva or bliss, where there is no positive or negative. I mean, there are tremendous amount of references to it. That is a state that every spiritual seeker seeks, because that takes them away from the cycle of life and death. And therefore it takes them into that space of energy from matter, and they do not reappear again. You need to have that little bit of rajas or tamas for you to take birth again. And this in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says beautifully, that the last thought in your mind is what creates you to come back here wearing new clothes, as it were. So that particular reference that you gave is extremely correct. But there is a reference by, I think, Vasudev. I'm not very sure his interpretations are very correct, but I would like you to decide. He says, Pitta is, what does he say here? Tamas is equivalent to Pitta, Rajas is equivalent to Kapha, and Sattva is equivalent to Vata. Is there such a correlation? First of all, I think Pitta is more Rajas, not Tamas, but what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, everything has a correlation, of course, in Ayurveda, and there's nothing left just in its own separate way. But I agree with you. Rajas is more, it's an energy that's moving. I mean, I can see where it can be a little bit of Vata, because Vata is air and Vata is moving. And so Rajas is moving. But of course, there is some element of fire also, because we're talking about some force that is. Rajas can be very hot. It's a creative kind of a hot energy. Sattva, though, is considered, it's true, it's considered in Ayurveda also a Agni, like a mental Agni, because it is Sattva that is allowing for digestion of emotions. If the Sattva is strong, it is able to handle, let's say, certain events, certain circumstances, certain emotions, certain news. You know, they say a person with a high sattva, if something happens to him or to his, you know, dear ones, will not go into reaction, will not go into depression or anger or unacceptance. It will deal with it. It will be able to handle it. So it, and what allows it to handle is that mental agni, that mental kind of, let's call it fire, but you know, it's a subtle level fire that is able to digest. So I see that the element in sattva, there is also an element of fire, which is present in pitta. I personally don't see one-to-one connection here, that one is one, you know, but I think they, all of them are interrelated in some way, and we can draw parallels like this.
Yeah. And also there was a interpretation of the doshas. I mean, it's a very street interpretation of doshas as faults or negatives, but Ayurveda doesn't treat it that way. The doshas mm-hmm. are also qualities. One is about the physical qualities and other as gunas are more about the mind states. So what is the most correct English translation of the word dosha in Ayurveda?
Honestly, there are a million of translations, but it's a physiologic, it's like a primordial energy, three primordial energies that are composing our physiological being.
The manifestation.
It's not good or bad.
It's a manifestation of energy.
Yes, it's a pure manifestation of energy. And like we said in the beginning, everything in this, according to Ayurveda, everything in this universe is made of five primordial elements. And so dosha, they're just combined into three doshas. So, but we're dealing with those five elements.
Yeah.
And we cannot say, you know, air is better than fire or water is better than earth. That would be absurd. It's just that each one can bring some qualities that are in some way helping us for certain things, and some qualities that are for certain things are less adaptive or adept. For example, if I want to sleep and I have too much vata and I'm not able to sleep because the air continues to, you know, move my nervous system and it's not able to relax and rest. So I need to bring it a little bit down. So I bring other elements into my system. I bring a little bit more water, earth to ground myself, you know. And if and the opposite is, you know, if I need to, in fact, wake up and do a meditation at 4 a.m, I need vata. If I'm kapha, there's no way, even with alarm, I will get out of that bed. So, you know, it all depends. And Ayurveda talks about the rhythm of the universe and when these energies, by the way, these energies are not only existing in our somas, in our bodies, they exist in the universe outside of us. So if we are in tune with the manifestation of a certain dosha in universe, we know how we will feel at a certain time of the day, and we know what activity, therefore, we should plan for that. And this is really, to me, it was just groundbreaking information when I got it, and I immediately changed my lifestyle, and I saw incredible results. Just to give you a simple example, you know, I had very hard time waking up in the morning at 8 o'clock. It was just a disaster for me, you know, and I thought, you know, it's enough sleep for me and I cannot get up. And I tried getting up at 6 or even before 6, and I was amazed that it was much easier. And because until 6 in the morning in the universe, there is a predominance of vata dosha. And if you notice, the birds start singing around 5 a.m. And so, you know, because this is the powerful energy of awakening, the energy of movement, the energy of creative, a very subtle energy. If we wake up during that time of the day, we embody that energy. And not only we take advantage of it, it's like, you know, like a surfer going on a wave. You catch that wave, right? So you got up with that wave, and not only you are helped to get up, you would carry that energy throughout your day. Your day will look completely different. You will embody those qualities of freshness, of movement, of clarity throughout the day. If you sleep past 8, past 6, and the more you sleep, like 7 is worse, but 8 is even worse, you will embody the energy of kapha. An energy of kapha, it's not bad or good, but it's heavy, it's dense, it's more, it's not subtle, it's more heavy feeling. So you will wake up with that feeling, and that's what you will carry for the rest of your day. And then you will be wondering, like, why am I feeling so tired? I slept enough, I slept even more than enough. Well, that's the problem, because you got up in the wrong period of time. And it's really, I mean, this is like a very basic information, but if you don't have that information at your disposal, you're making wrong choices.
Yeah, you're very right. Well, in very simple words, first of all, the doshas could be the material manifestation of whatever that energy, and the gunas could be the mental non-material manifestations in the mind. That's one way of looking at it. Somebody said dispositions, maybe bioelements was another word. Yun Kim had asked a question: is tamas similar to non-action or inaction in Tao? Personally, I don't think so, because the non-action and inaction in Tao, as with the Upanishads, Mandukya Upanishad, that talks about the disengagement state of the fourth state of Turiya, it's almost a sattvic state. That is what Tao defines as non-action. Whereas in Ayurveda, that tamas has a slightly different meaning. I wouldn't say it's completely negative, but it's a slightly different meaning. Somebody asked about chakras. I'll certainly cover it in the next advanced webinar. That's what I'm planning to talk about. And there is also Chris is here in the audience. He sent me a book written by his sister, which compares these primordial energies, the five energies, with the universal laws of nature, kinetic energy, the gravitational energy, and so on. It's an amazingly brilliant bringing together of like a quantum science with some of these elements.
Okay, I'll briefly just say that these are some of the Ayurvedic methods to restore the balance in physical doshas that we talked about, Vata, Pitta, Kapha, and also in mental gunas, Rajas, Tamas, and Sattva. I wouldn't read them necessarily, but I would tell you that I experienced that on myself, and I'm practicing that, and it's really, really a powerful way. And if, as you can see, it's very non-invasive. There's nothing here that can, you know, hurt you. But it's simple changes to your lifestyle, to your diet, and introducing all these therapies. If you notice, they are addressing sense organs. They are addressing your vision, your sense of smell, of taste, of hearing, and tactile through oleations, through massage. So you see that Ayurveda is rebalancing all these doshas and gunas through working with your sense organs. A lot of their treatment is based on that. Plus, of course, there's yoga and pranayama and meditation addressing the mind. So here I've kind of put together, self-reflecting on me, what has been my experience of when I was, these are two extremes in a way, because this is where, before I'm talking about the real low, you know, because as you know, we're all dynamic and the situations change. But when if I think of the low, this is how I felt before I made the change. On the guna level, which is the quality level, my gunas were more like cold, dry, rough, light, mobile, some hard, dense, and dull qualities. So I was in that state, and that reflected in my life, in how I felt about myself and how I physically felt. So I had no meaningful purpose at all, which I was constantly feeling in a state of anxiety, with obsessive thinking what's gonna happen and how am I going to react. I was quite irritable. I had a lot of fears bubbling up. I had low self-esteem as a result. I had hormonal imbalance, and I was even told that I could not have children. So that was really the icing on the cake. And consider I was an ex-tennis player. So I was really, I was healthy. I had no preconditions of any kind. But I was living from a state of scarcity. I was continuously feeling a victim, looking on inputs from outside world as to what to do, how should I do. again, thinking of Tamas, you know, I was really getting a sense of I was there. And I had a chronic back pain, and I don't know where it was coming from. Fast forward a couple of years through, you know, doing all the work I did on Ayurveda with my various kind of lifestyle changes, diet changes, constant search for knowledge, and of course, herbal supplements and medical, treatments, physical body treatments, massages. I went to on the highest stage, and if I look on the highest stage where I've gone, so my qualities have changed, because with my doctor, I know he was working a lot on the really cellular level to change the qualities I was expressing, and the qualities needed to compensate what you have, you need the opposite qualities to bring it to balance. And so the qualities opposite were introduced, like warm, weighty, you know, I needed some earth, oily, I needed some water, stable, again, earth, soft, water. So, you know, I was very much into air and space kind of dosha rather than into earth, water, and fire. And the results on how I started to feel, again, this took a couple of years, maybe even 3 years of Ayurveda and as well coaching. But the results I started to see, which was my improved self-value, I started to make conscious choices. And that was the key of everything. I was much clearer in my mind. I started having meaningful relationships in my life versus just superficial, random friends. I started feeling healthier in my responses to life. I started to feel like there's opening of a flow of life and love. And I actually, you know, was able to become a mother naturally and very unexpectedly to me. I started living from a state of abundance. I got to my own wisdom. I stopped asking people around all the time what to do. And I started more relying on my own intuition and wisdom, and just sleeping restfully, you know. So I saw, now looking back at what my past brought me to, these were the results. And so it was really night and day for me. And my back pain was completely and mysteriously gone, and it never came back, which is, you know, still a very odd thing to me. And then finally, I kind of wanted to make a summary of how I see Ayurveda and coaching complement each other. Both of them I saw working on both levels, so on mental and on physical. Because before I was thinking, no, coaching is more mental, Ayurveda is more physical. But once I really analyzed what has happened, I saw that both of them are working on both levels. And on a mental level, Ayurveda is giving a lot of very authentic ancient wisdom and knowledge, which haven't changed for 5,000 years and probably will not change for another 5,000. Clear awareness of one life's purpose and direction on what needs to be done. And coaching was a beautiful supplement because it gave me awareness of myself and where am I in that whole process, in that whole field. And it gave me the courage to actually act, not just to have the knowledge and sit with it, but to actually act, make changes, and commit myself to a new way of being. And that was a beautiful combination. And on a physical level, Ayurveda is working, as you saw now, on qualities, on guna, on doshas, on a really cellular level transformation through all the sense organs and other treatments that it's using. Through, you know, all kinds of, this is a Ayurvedic anatomy, dhatu, you know, the tissues, the doshas, the, you know, channels, srotas. It's completely revamping the body system. And coaching is doing the same, Because, for example, learning now on somatic coaching and how our body is knowing everything has ever happened to us and storing in us, and how if we unpack it and bring awareness to that and consciously change, release and make a change into the new soma, into the new way we want to exist in this world, if we start doing it from our physical body, it will manifest also in our mind, in our mental and spiritual manifestation here. It's a beautiful process, really. I am experiencing it now as I'm learning it, and it's a very powerful tool coaching is offering. So with both of these, as a combination, I think that it's really a comprehensive way, from my stand, in my experience, of course, into the complete well-being. So I wanted to share this realization that I've had. And the very last thing I wanted to show is just what similarities they have both. And I found three, which is both, they're both looking at our selves, at our systems holistically. It's not just mind, not just body, not just, you know, anything in between. It's everything. They're both working on emotional and physical transformation toward a healthy state. They both are working on awareness creation. So whether you take your path through Ayurveda or coaching, you have to know where you are, where you want to go, and what you need to address to get there. And the road ahead is both of them are allowing you for the conscious choice making, because whether you have the knowledge, wisdom of 5,000 year Ayurveda or your self-awareness, you are able to make conscious choice making. You are no longer in the dark. Courageous action. And this is, you know, a lot of it is, I've talked about coaching, but with Ayurveda, of course, once you know the knowledge, it's easier to make that step forward. And commitment, because once you know what can be done, what healthy can be for you, and you are not imprisoned in your current state, you make that commitment and you move forward. So with that, I think I finished my presentation, and thank you very much for listening. Thanks. There.
Thanks a lot, Alia. It was extremely good, and the audience has been extremely in praise of you. I keep talking about this, and it's not a joke. It's about the mindless awareness. It's a disengaged awareness, the witnessing and observing awareness that you create by going deep into both our mind and body systems. And that's what Ayurveda does, almost at a cellular level, almost at a quantum level. It goes into finding out what those pluses and minuses of our system are and how they can be integrated. Because there isn't anything in this universe and in our bodies, which are a reflection of the universe, which are either purely positive or purely negative. They all have a mix of them. And how we choose to integrate them is really what decides what state of life that we lead and how happy we are. So with that, we'll close up today. Thank you for staying with us.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. You can listen and subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. We launch new episodes weekly. To learn more about coaching, leadership, and self-development, visit us at coacharya.com. That's coacharya.com. See you next time.